If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So when this one popped up, I knew it was there. I knew that potential was there. And then I kind of just winged it.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with award-winning Property Investor of the Year, Sam Gordon. With a track record of building a property portfolio of over 20 properties under the age of 30, we hear about the amazing deal on a small development that he bought that made him over $220,000 in equity. Gordon starts off by sharing where he found this absolute diamond of a steal.
So this one was a bit of an interesting site. This one's on the south coast of New South Wales. It was in a suburb that I've done a bit of work in before. This was actually my second project in this area. And I was looking for something a little bit bigger, something that I could potentially add a little bit more value to. And so I came across this site. It was very much being overlooked. It hadn't actually sat on the market all that long. I think it had been maybe on the market for about two or three weeks. But it was being targeted towards an owner-occupier sort of build because it was a bigger block. It was a very awkward shape. Not so much to maybe an investor, but it was just over a quarter acre and it had been overlooked by a lot of...
That's a big block.
It is a big block. I guess the thing is, though, it's a little bit further out of Sydney, right? So it's not right in Sydney. So you don't really have to move by those standards. But in this area, a quarter acre block was still a big block. And it was definitely being looked at more as a potential owner-occupier sort of site. It had a nice view, nice outlook out the back and very nice trees and whatnot in surrounding properties. So I had more of that owner-occupied appeal. A lot of people missed it because of that side of things. I bought from the agent before. I'd done a bit of work with him. I actually leased through his company as well. And I rang him and I said, you know, what are they actually chasing on this thing? Because, I think I could potentially, I just kind of said to him, I think I might build it for myself, build my own home. But I could see that it had the potential that we could tweak it to get the dual dwellings on it.
Oh, okay. So you mentioned that it is a dual dwelling there. So how did you know and find that out? Because not every single council, every single block you can actually put these type of things on. What kind of research did you find or do to be able to go, okay, oh, let's put a duplex on or whatever it is? Could you have even done further more than that? Because such a large block, you could have potentially gone and done a full-scale development of like townhouses and units and all that sort of stuff.
So in this council, it was zoned low density. So low density, so everyone kind of thought this would only be purely a single block site. But because of being over quarter acre, so quarter acre in this area, you could do essentially duplex or dual lock. And essentially that was what I was running off. Actually, sorry, not the duplex, but you could do the dual lock. So you could do detached dwellings on 500 square meters each. But a lot of people looked at the site and it was quite slopey. And the second area, not heap slopey, but right in the middle, it was slopey. And the second area got quite narrow. So a lot of people overlooked what it actually had the potential for. And I just kind of realized with a bit of tweaking, I could essentially retaining wall the middle section of it, keep it under a certain height that made it be a non-legal sort of height, retaining wall that we would have to have gone and got council approval, engineers reports and everything for, but enough to cut the slope out enough that we could actually build on both. And that was where a lot of people had missed the opportunity or just definitely had not seen it. I got it for a real steal with what it was actually worth.
So tell me a little bit about this block. Just describe, you said it was a very sort of awkward kind of shape, was it? And also too, it was a slope. Slope doesn't help as well because that means that it's going to be increased cost to actually get it up to level. But just tell us and explain maybe perhaps you can even demonstrate with your fingers and hands if you want. Show us what the block actually looked like.
It was quite long at the start as it came to it, and then it kind of narrowed out towards the back. And I think what it was the slope was through the middle. So a lot of people thought, well, we can't really put the duplex straight on it. But I wasn't even thinking about a duplex. my idea was we'll cut it in the middle with a retaining wall and cut the slope out. So we even the slope out. So as long as there was a certain builder that I'd worked with previously, and as long as it was under a 1 meter fall, the build cost actually didn't increase. So even though the slope across the whole block was about 1.8, we cut it in the middle and made them a 900 slope piece, which kept us under the meter. It also kept the retaining wall under the house, under the appropriate height for an engineered quality, or I guess an engineered reported retaining wall. And essentially, yeah, we cut it and it made it dead. Essentially, we made them almost dead flat each one. And yeah, we definitely got away with it in a pretty positive light. And the thing was, because I was holding it as well, I made sure the retaining wall was strong as an ox, right? It was built bloody strong. Those posts are about, I think we had them out 900 and I think they were 2.4 meter posts. So it was a bloody long way down to that ground, those posts. So it's not going anywhere. But yeah, it was essentially how we were able to get away with it.
So I'm curious now. You mentioned that you cut the block. So are you saying that the two or the dual oak that you put there, it wasn't literally flat on each one? It was basically like one was a little bit higher than the other. Is that kind of what you're explaining?
Yeah, it was split level, and they were separate dwellings completely. So the one was long and skinny almost think of it like a vertical fashion. One was really long and skinny, and the other one was long and skinny in the horizontal on that top back section. It was just a really out of the box way of thinking about it, and it just really, like, I was just kind of really open and praying I pulled this thing off, and thankfully it came to fruition. It definitely worked out well.
I love those kind of stories. It's amazing because, yeah, it's usually the out of the norm or, you know, lateral thinking type of deals that usually generate the most, I guess, income, and also to be able to increase the most value for any particular property. I mean, I've got a very, very well-known, developer who I've worked with closely. And he was also explaining to me something very similar to actually what you've done. It wasn't necessarily a sort of awkward type of block, but what was interesting was that there was not much space. So he tried to actually fit in an extra dwelling in the back in the very limited space that they have in there. And on top of that, there was a lot of trees and so forth like that. I think one of the issues that they had was that it was, once again, sloping. And a lot of people completely overlooked that because they thought it's going to be, one, too costly because it's sloping. It's going to cost a lot of money to increase the level. But also, two, to actually develop on something like that just seemed too challenging. And there's just too many factors that was in there. There's neighbors to get through. There was just all these other trees that are surrounding. Like, how is it going to be able to get anyone convinced to do it? In the end, he bought it, and it's very much similar. He actually made over something like $200,000 or $300,000 from that deal as well. But it's those kind of out of the boxes that really, really, you know, make an amazing development. So speaking of which, then let's jump into a little bit more about then, I guess, the ins and the outs of what happened. You went to the agent, had a chat to them, purchased the property. What kind of negotiation did you need to do? Because it seemed like a lot of people just overlooked it and didn't want it.
Yeah, it did take a little bit to actually negotiate the site. So I really had to stick to my guns on what I wanted to pay for it, because I had looked at it when it first went up, and they'd listed it up around 400K as like a lifestyle block. You know, had really nice outlook, nice trees and everything. But I wasn't looking at it for owner occupier. I was looking at it for this site. So I wanted to make sure I could make as much on it as I could. And I knew a lot of people would be spooked by the awkward design of the block. So within about 3 weeks, they dropped it. I think they dropped it from offers over 399 to about 350. And I knew when they'd done that, that was a huge cut to do in 3 weeks. So obviously, for one, I knew they were probably motivated. And for two, they realized they weren't getting the sort of attention that you always want at the early stages of a campaign. So I got in touch with the agent who I'd bought from before. And as I said to you before, he leased my other property as well in the area. And we just sort of kind of just started, you know, talking about it and seeing what was actually going to happen. And he said, look, this guy needs to sell this block. He's got another development going through, and he needs the money from this sale to go over and be able to finish off the development on the other one. To start the development. So he was due to settle and he was running out of time. True to form, I put in a very, very low offer. So he was still chasing about, you know, those mid threes, and I put in an offer at 260. And putting it in perspective as well, like, this is when the market in Sydney was bloody strong. Like, this was late 2016. So the market was strong, but when there's motivation, right, like, there's always, And he's trying to chase a market that would pay a premium for it, but he's chasing that market with an awkward block. And so when I put that offer in, they just pretty much, you know, told me where to go. And I just let it sit for a week or two. And then what I did was I started researching the surrounding properties, because one of the other things that, I had done this a little earlier as well, and I knew someone that lived next door to it that had trees that overhung the site. So the only other thing, so there was very nice trees at the rear, but then there was trees from a neighboring site that were overhanging into it as well, that were literally overhanging the property a fair bit. And it looked like a very dilapidated site, very overgrown and whatnot. And so I found the owner, and you could get addresses, but I couldn't get the phone number. I got addresses, and I'd send him a letter just to inquire on the block to see if he wanted to sell it, because I was going to see if I could amalgamate the sites. And he ended up ringing me, and he was this old fella that owned so much property in the area. And he just rang me, I think, because he kind of, you know, was pretty impressed the fact that I'd reached out to him and tried to chase him for this site. And he said, "Oh, what are you chasing the site for, mate?" And I said, "Oh, I was looking at the one next door, and I was looking if I could amalgamate him." And he goes, "Oh, okay, good stuff, mate, good stuff." And he goes, "Well, look, I've actually got plans going through at the moment for a dual lock." I thought, here we go, precedence directly next door. And I said, "Oh, okay, when do you think you're doing that?" And he goes, "Oh, within the next 6 months, I'll have started it." So what no one else would have known in the area was that he was actually going to completely clear that site. All those trees that were overhanging our site, he was getting rid of all of them. And it's because I asked him about it, and he goes, "Yeah, mate, everything's going. We're building like a really nice like dual lock right next to it." So when I found that out, I thought, here we go. Like there's some value here, because he's going to clear this. He's going to build two really nice houses. And so I hit the agent back up, and I just increased it to 270. And this was probably, I think maybe about, you know, 10, 14 days after that first offer. And they came back to me at 310. I thought, oh, here we go. Like they're already dropping it this night. Here we go. And I said, "Look, I've only got a pre-approval." I think I waited a couple of days and I said, "Look, my pre-approvals are 280. It's all I've got." And pretty much just let it sit there. A week later, they came back at, I think, 295. In the end, we got it all done and dusted at the 283. So it was probably quite literally a month negotiation from when I first started, and having the info of the next door, knowing what he was going to do, made me feel pretty comfortable in buying. I was going to make a really good margin. We ended up getting it done at 283. I needed to have a really quick settlement, so that really worked in my favor, because he was coming down to needing like 35 days to settle this other one, and I said, "Look, mate, 30-day settlement, I'll get this thing done." And so that's where sometimes the power of having really strong offers in terms of conditions can really come in and get you a steal. Because I think it was probably worth in those low threes, but I think it would have taken some time to convince someone to get it to pay into that sort of amount. By the time I settled it, because it wasn't registered at the time, it was going through for what do you call it? Yeah, sorry, going through for title. That was in the middle of the next year, which was mid 2017, which was the absolute peak of the Sydney market. And when I settled it, they valued it a lot higher. When I went to build it, they valued it a lot higher than what it was actually going to be able to, what I'd originally paid it for. So it was, it was very good, because they took security over the sale that I'd made, and then they lent him for the other block. So that's what it got through for me. So it was kind of perfect timing, man. It was, I was kind of lacking on the timing on that side of things, which is all about property, right? Like so much of it is the condition of the contract and finding people's motivations and making sure you're getting, you know, really looking for the people that are motivated to sell. And that's when a lot of the time you can make a really good margin on the way in.
Totally. And this is what I really, really resonate and also heard from what you just explained. It sounded like you completely took the emotion out of it, because that's the challenge we all face. As an investor, we're looking at the numbers, and I don't know if there was another, you know, buy out there. Sound like there wasn't really. It's just you going in there, and you're able to negotiate quite hard. And just from hearing that, you didn't actually just go in and just, you know, say, "Look, this is my final offer and that's it." You just went in back and forth negotiating, and that took a little bit of time. But because of that, the vendor knew that you're motivated, he was motivated, and you guys were able to do a transaction. And that whole time when I heard you, it wasn't like, you know, I'm going to increase this, and, you know, I think I better get it at this and increase it. And because the thing is, when as a buyer, if you're buying on an emotion, it's easy to say, "Oh, I'll just buy it at that price and then be done and dusted." But time really, really helps.
Yeah, exactly. 100% with what you said there. But I think one of the other big things, I think if he'd gone out and got approved plans or got a builder to site up, spec up a house on it, I think he would have sold it a lot, like very easily. And I think what the problem was, a lot of people were going out there trying to get their builders to go craft a design on this, but that all takes time, right? And that was time he didn't have. So if he'd had more time up his sleeve, I think he could have got quite a strong price for it because of the location and the atmosphere and everything that was there with that property. I think he could have, but because he didn't have that time factor to allow people to go and get their plans drawn up and because it was in quite a nice little pocket as well. I think if he'd had a little bit more time on that side, he definitely could have got a lot more money for it.
Coming up after the break, we take a further look into the development side of the deal.
So Handyman or a chippy that I was using at the time for other projects, he came and we banged that thing out in about 2 days. It was like a 40-meter retaining wall.
Gordon reveals some handy tricks for saving on costs.
So I ended up building it for half of that price. We built that one for $130,000. It was ridiculous.
We learn how he turned an unconventional looking property into something desirable for tenants.
It was all about the appeal of it. So what I made sure that we did was that front facade of it. I made it look really homestead, really country style.
And that's coming up next. I'm Tarun Shah and you're listening to Property Investory. Are you interested in finding great deals like Sam Gordon does? If the answer is yes, then let Sam help you find them, since he does this all day, every day. I've asked Sam to offer a free 30-minute strategy session to help you put together an actionable property plan to help you build your portfolio just like him. To get your free strategy session, simply text 0499881040 and quote APS. Welcome back. Gordon delves into the process he went through after purchasing the property and what he had to do before he could begin development.
So what I had to do first up was get my approval for the dual occupancy. So I got that done. When that came through, that took a little bit of time as well, but not too long. Probably took about 3 months to get that through because I had to show them how I was going to do it. And in that time I was going through, I had to build my retaining wall as well to kind of split it up. So then I could prove that we had the levels that they needed that they were happy with. Because when it went over a certain height, I think in that council it was 1.2 in the council. When it went over that height, we had to change plans and everything. You had to put in for different. It was just a lot of other rigmarole that would have, and then of course costs on top of that as well. So I had to split it up first, and that's where I had it. Same thing, right? So handyman or a chippy that I was using at the time for other projects. He came and we banged that thing out in about 2 days. It was like a 40-meter retaining wall. Got the excavator dude to come in. He cleared the site, both sides, dug all our massive bloody holes and put these 1-4 in the ground. And whatever they were, around roughly like 1.5 in the ground. And then there was about 900 sticking up. And we banged that out pretty quick. And then we were able to get the approval came through for both of those. And and then it was just kind of shopping. Builders as well to make sure we're getting it built for the absolute best price possible.
So let's take a step back. For the listeners who might not know you and your background, how many properties would you have done by now? How many transactions of properties? Because obviously jumping into development is a completely different thing to buying, holding and adding value.
Yeah. This was my, I kind of call these two, right? Because they're two on separate titles. So this was my 7th and 8th property in the portfolio at the time. And I think I was 26 or 27, I think, when I did this one.
You're still quite early in stages in your portfolio. So how did you learn all about this development? Because to actually understand how this all works, it's not like you can just go in and do it yourself. And you know, I guess you've learned your lesson not to do this stuff yourself. I hope you didn't do the retaining wall yourself.
Well, I did it with the chippy, right? Like we did. So what I did was I was looking for something a bit different. I knew if we found so I was looking for a site at the time, but I was thinking I would just go for a standard site in terms of like just a normal, because what I'd done in the area before was find really, really undervalued blocks of dirt, and I did specky homes on them, and I used to make a really, really good margin on that. And so what I was looking for at the time was actually another one of those, but I knew in the DCP that we could on a quarter acre block or bigger do a dual lock and essentially individually title them. So when this one popped up, I knew it was there. I knew that potential was there. And then I kind of just winged it. So I started, I kind of made that first offer and then was working on it and spoke to my, Got in touch with a town planner and started speaking with the town planner. And I said, look, if I'm able to do this, will this actually work? And he said, yeah, I could definitely get that through. And he said, as long as you can split those levels, yeah, we can definitely get that through. So that's essentially what we went through and did. And just out of the box thinking, you know, and making sure you have the right team around you as well. And yeah, definitely paid dividends on this one.
So it sounds like you did reach out to Expertise Town Planner, you know, to be able to find that. You search for builders, you know, you hustle to try and get that kind of, you know, really, really good deal. And obviously it all came together really, really well. What's also interesting as well is, I guess, did you have a chance to speak to the neighbor afterwards after you purchased the property and get some advice on that? Or it was just like, yep, you know, you gave me the advice, I'm running with it.
I definitely spoke to him because he called me back about a couple of months later to hit me up for the fence. So we had a good chat and kind of talked through a few different things on that side of, as well. I picked his brain on it as well and how he got it through. And he gave me a couple of different builder contacts, which one of them actually was the one. So I built separate builders. So I was able to build a specy builder for the main dwelling that was the long, narrow one, which was when I say long, narrow, it kind of makes it sound small, but it was a 250 square meter home. Like it was actually quite a big home. On the other one, when I built the kind of more horizontal home, lengthways, long and skinny lengthways, it was a bit of a smaller home. And I had to go with a private builder on that one. But the way I kind of was able to keep my costs down was I actually only built that one as well. So it was kind of a bit more time intensive. This is before I was running the business. So I had a lot more time on my hands. But yeah, essentially I was able to, everyone else that was specking me up, if I was to build it under someone else's license, was really, really expensive. Like almost as expensive as the 250 square meter house on one side was this 150 square meter on the other one. They were pretty much the same price or more. So I actually ended up building it for half of that price. We built that one for $130,000. It was ridiculous.
How did you manage to get it under, so did you get a license or certification or something like that?
Yes. So you can do an owner builder course. There's a few problems around, well, not so much problems around it, but if the intention is to sell the properties, you will come into some strife with them. But if you're going to hold them and retain them, which I definitely did as rental assets, then obviously it definitely comes with a pretty good way around that there, because you can just hold it. And I think it's you need the warranty builder's warranty for 7 years, and then after that, it just becomes like any other house.
There's so many little intricacies in so many different things that you've learned along the way. I mean, these are fantastic tips, because this can save you, 100K or so in terms of building. You know, just take a course. How much does it cost, and how long does it take?
Well, this was the peak of the Sydney market as well when I looked to build these. So like every builder was like so busy, it wasn't funny. It was really hard to get a competitive price on it. And that's when, one of my mates essentially just said to me, look, one of these guys that I've been put onto said, why don't you own his builder's license? We do all the cheapy work for you, do the whole of that side of things and then organize the other guys. And he was able to do it for, it was definitely an out-of-the-box way of thinking about it. And that's why it definitely pays to shop around where you can, because you never know what idea someone's going to come up with. Mate, even on that, The previous builder I'd used for the previous build, my build that I'd done before it, I was set on using them again because they'd done a really good job for me. But they were just being really difficult and really painful with this site. It just kind of shows you don't need to have loyalty. Just because someone's done a really good job for you before, like on this build, it just proved to be really, really difficult to get them to work on this one. So I went to someone else and it was an absolute breeze with them. And yet the time before, everyone else has been really difficult, and the builder I used that one was a breeze. So it's a lot of give and take with these different things. You just got to, whenever someone's offering the best thing at a time and you know they're going to do a good job, then yeah, I definitely look to take that option.
Wow, that's amazing to be able to hear that. You also mentioned that the size of the builds were a bit different. One was 250 square meters, the other one was 150. That's quite a substantial difference. How come? What was the reason behind that?
It was the setbacks on the smaller one. So the smaller one, because of the layout of the block and the shape of the block, and again, this is why so many people miss the opportunity with this site, the setbacks from both front and rear boundaries would have made it a really hard site to work. But essentially all we did was just made it a really long, skinny house, and it didn't matter. I had absolutely no problems renting it. The value was still valued at really high. It was all about the appeal of it. So what I made sure that we did was that front facade of it, I made it look really homestead, really country style. So because it was like long and skinny, I just made it look like a colonial, like a house on a farm, like a really big, long, and set it off nicely with the landscaping at the front. And it just, I pulled it off well. I'm kind of very, very happy with how I did on that one.
Yeah, it must have been a huge, huge learning curve for you as well, too, to get into a development project like that. So how long did that whole process take to get to where you actually were able to make over 200K of that?
I think when I was negotiating on it, with probably towards the mid to end part of 2016, I think I ended up buying it around about October, November 2016. I think I got my approvals around about May 2017, and I think it was built, done and dusted by the start of 2018, I think it was. I think the second one was finished a little bit later, because obviously, like, that was a very different process. I couldn't just hand it all over to a specy builder. But yeah, it was probably around about 18 months all up with that deal. Obviously I made really good money out of the project, got really good cash flows out of it. But it took me out of the market for a long time as well.
And I was going to say, did you come across any particular challenges that you can remember? Because being the first time to do development of this caliber for you, you probably had to learn a lot of things very, very quickly. Did you come across any specific challenges that you think, oh, wow, you know, it's great learning lessons, but I won't do it again in my future ones?
I remember one very, very clearly. Was the gas mate. So this property was on natural gas. But the gas, I can't even remember the exact reason, but it was a real, for want of a better word, it was an absolute shit fight trying to get it to site. And I couldn't even get it to the second one. And I paid a premium getting the access to the site. And I ended up paying about an extra $5,000 to get the gas. Oh, sorry, that's right. It was for the, I wanted the gas heating in the house because it was a colder part of, colder climate. I wanted gas heating through the house as opposed to, I could have just gone ducted reverse cycle. I would have paid an extra $1,000 for the system and it would have been ducted reverse and I wouldn't have had to pay the extra money for the gas line to run up further and all the different things that I had to put on it. And suffice to say, when it rolled around to build the secondary one, I didn't bother with gas. I just did it as the electrics because it was, and I can't even remember what the exact issue was for the life of me, but it was, anyway, I ended up scrapping it by the time I got to the second one. And it was something I definitely make sure I do my checks on it properly to site and not just, not just in the contract. And it's just, not just, verbally, that it's actually 100% on site. So there's all these different little things you learn on each deal that you make sure you do the appropriate checks for on the next one. And then also, in terms of actual returns on it as well, it didn't value any higher having gas. It didn't rent for any more. So it was, for the sake of probably spending extra maybe $5,000 or $7,000 to get it to the site, if I could go back, I definitely would have changed it. It was also the headache of it as well. It was a real headache to get that up and running too.
That was exactly what I was going to ask. Like, does it actually add any value? Was there a request from the tenant saying, I need to have get a gas? I'm pretty sure the tenants, if they want gas, then go somewhere else. There's plenty of other tenants out there. So
definite lesson you're learning.
So let's talk a little bit about then wrapping it up, I guess, is what was the full outcome of it? You completed the development after about 18 months, purchased it under market value, got an absolute steal of a price because there's a motivated vendor. What was the outcome at the end of the day?
Again, I did all the landscaping myself with the chippy fella as well. My old boy came out and helped me lay all the turf and whatnot. So we saved costs where we could. All up, it came in with both built to complete was $686,000. All done and dusted for both dwellings, land, everything, landscaping, everything. I got it revalued at two vals. One came in at $950, another one came in at $980. So really strong vals. And the rental return on the main dwelling was $580, and on the little one, I got $430 a week for it as well. So for a $686,000 development, I got over $1,000 a week rent on two brand new properties in pretty good locations.
And you still got those properties?
Yeah, still hold those ones.
So it wasn't long ago. It was only about a couple of years ago you would have got those vows. So do you think, since then, have you actually got it revalued since then?
I haven't had them revalued since then. The market is definitely, it's just stabilized. Probably after it finished, it's probably gone up a little bit. And then it's probably come back to where I'd probably got them revalued at as well. So I pulled out all my money plus some when I finished the deal. And a positive cash flow, I'm pretty sure on that one, it's a tune of $14,000, I'm pretty sure the last time I checked. And then depreciation on it, two brand new houses, it's like over $15,000 a year depreciation as well. So it's just a pretty tidy little deal, that one.
If you learned a lot from the episode, Stay tuned for future episodes where Sam Gordon and I'll continue to share with you more property stories from his own journey. In the meantime, I've asked Sam to give us a free 30-minute strategy session to help you put together an actionable property plan to help you build your portfolio just like him. To get your free strategy session, simply visit australianpropertyscout.com.au and fill out the contact form. Or you can text 0499881040 and quote APS. Thanks for listening.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.